So today I'll continue with the talk on the asava, the defilements which cause the mind to ferment, which cause the mind to go sour. And it's again simply a poetic way of describing the defilements which exist in our minds, the things in our mind which bring about suffering, which bring about discomfort, which bring about evil unwholesome states. Or those things which are evil, unwholesome states, which exist in our hearts. And the third part of Lord Buddha's talk is on how to remove the asava through patisevana, through using. And in this means using the requisites, the things which are required to keep us alive and to keep us living in a state of comfort and ease and peace. And these four things are these things which are requisite for meditators and for monks, for people who have left the home life. These things are a sign or are a symbol of what it means to be one who has left the home life. So it's important, first of all, to understand why, what it means, what are the things that are truly necessary, and how these things are used, and how they will be, how they come into play in the Buddha's teaching. We go back to think of when the Lord Buddha himself first went forth before he was a Buddha, when he was simply an unenlightened bodhisattva, and he was searching for the truth. So the first thing he did was left behind his home life. And this is the first symbolic gesture which we undertake on the path to become free from suffering, whether it be as a monk or as a nun. This is the first symbolic gesture of the Lord Buddha, was to cut off his hair, shave off his beard, give up his princely attire, and put on a set of rag robes, a set of rags or castaway cloth, and take up life in the forest without a home, without possessions. And the life which the Bodhisattva, the Buddha to be, lived for 6 years is marked by this lack of luxury, lack of possessions, lack of objects which might lead to falling back into sensual desire, desire for sensual pleasures. And so the Lord Buddha, when he became enlightened, he established for the monks and the nuns a way to live. And this is important because often we might think being a monk or being a nun is more about rules, about how many precepts you have and the rules which you have to follow, which are different from ordinary people. But in truth, in the time of when the Lord Buddha when the Bodhisattva went forth, from that time, for many years, the Lord Buddha had established no rules. And it was only in the time when one monk mistakenly or deludedly went back and slept with had sexual intercourse with his ex-wife as a monk. At that point, the Lord Buddha decided that it was time to lay down some rules, because the people who had come to be ordained as monks in his under his guidance were no longer completely pure. And so at that time he began to lay down rules as the cause arised, as someone did something more and more inappropriate, the Lord Buddha would lay down more and more rules. But the key, we can see that these rules then are not the key to the, what it means to be a recluse or to what it means to be one who has gone forth. We can see that the key is the giving up of the home life. This is called papaccha, the going forth or the leaving behind, the going out from the home life. And so we leave behind all of the shelter of our parents, of our loved ones, of our beloved possessions, of our comfort and our safety, and our culture, and all of the things which are tying us down and keeping us from seeing objectively, things which lead us down the wrong path or lead us, deceive us or make us forget the truth of our lives, make us forget the truth of suffering, make us forget the need to find freedom, the things which intoxicate us and lead us to get lost and get stuck in the swamp or get stuck in the rounds of rebirth, in the ocean of rebirthing. When we leave all of these things behind, we have only, according to the Lord Buddha's teaching, we have only four things which we keep as our own. And of course, in this day and age, there are many more things which we will use even as monks and nuns. But the point of these four things, even in the Buddha's time, there were many more things which the monks would use. The point of these four requisites is to hold these things up as the core of our life as homeless people. That these four things are our way of living. That no matter what, we will always stick by these four things. So the first one is food. And the second one is clothing. The third one is shelter. And the fourth one is medicine. That in the end, all of the things which we might use, even to the point now when we use computers or when we use vehicles, when we ride in vehicles or when we use telephones or so on, even though we might use all of these things, we don't consider them to be a part of our lives. They are things which we use maybe to spread the Buddhist teaching or to communicate or keep in touch with the rest of the world, which is changing and evolving in its own way. But we still maintain these four things as our training, as our way of life, which is indeed different from the way of life of other people. And the difference lies in these four things, the first being the food. As homeless people, we aren't able to go and buy our own food. We aren't able to choose what we will eat. And we take it as a vow or as a practice that we accept whatever food we get, whatever food goes into our bowls, we eat that food. We don't choose food because it's delicious or so on. We try to be accommodating and be unattached to our food. And the Lord Buddha, in fact, said that we should accept whatever scraps of food people put in our bowls. And he was referring to the alms round for monks. Nowadays, they still go through the village and go on alms round. But it can also mean that we take whatever food is given to us, be it in the monastery or outside of the monastery. Now, of course, monks are also allowed to take food in the monastery, but they have to reflect equally. They have to reflect wherever they get their food from, reflect that this is simply for continuing my life, for getting rid of hunger and avoiding overeating, for living in peace, for living in ease, for the continuation of this body, for the continuation of the holy life. And in this way, we won't be blameworthy, we'll be able to live at peace. We won't be burdened by food. We won't be burdened in the way of other people as far as cooking, keeping, storing, and all of the other necessities which are required as a result of keeping, storing, and cooking food for ourselves. Instead, we take whatever donations, and of course, if we get no food, we don't eat. Then we are prepared and equally happy to live our day without food, if there is nothing being offered. This is the first requisite which we use it, and we use it in such a way that it doesn't lead to more defilements to arise in our minds. We take food to be simply something which keeps us alive and allows us to continue practicing. This is the first one. The second one is clothing. And so as monks and nuns, we are separate from ordinary people in that we wear a simple, inexpensive cast-off piece of cloth. And depending on the color nowadays, you see many different colors for the monks, and for nuns nowadays there are also many different colors. And the color, of course, is not important. And in actuality, we would simply dye it some dark off color. We would avoid colors which are beautiful, which are attractive. But whatever color, the point is that it is a cast off. It is a simple cloth which is inexpensive. And in fact, for the monks, they make it a point of cutting it into pieces first and sewing it together in pieces. And for for some nuns, you might also see the same thing. But in the end, it's simply a piece of cloth which does the bare minimum of protecting us from heat, protecting us from cold, protecting us from the bite and the sting of mosquitoes and insects and all sorts of animals. Small creatures, and of course for covering up the parts of the body which are shameful, the parts of the body which have evolved through time to be a part of that part of life shameful, which is a cause for shame, which is has to do with sexuality, which has to do with sensuality. According to the Lord Buddha's teaching, in ancient times, before the world was perfectly evolved, we were beings living outside of the earth. We were beings like angels up in you could say, in outer space. But it was in a time before there were planets really evolved after the Big Bang, but before the earth had solidified. And at that time, beings were neither male or female, and there were no sexual organs, reproductive organs. But at the time when the earth solidified and beings began to become coarser and coarser and began to ingest and consume coarser and coarser food to the point where they evolved into the species which we now find on earth, they had also developed craving for sensuality and eventually what became known as sexuality, or the copulation between male and female, or nowadays even between male and male, or female and female, or between animals of different species even to this day. And this is brought about by those parts of the body, certain parts of the body, which as Buddhist monks or nuns, we cover up and we keep closed, and we try to move away from and not let them become a part of our lives, so that those parts of our body which have evolved to become a part of this rebirth cycle, so that we will again and again and again be attached to whatever form of being we come to be born as. We come to do away with this and to become free from this desire and this necessity, this addiction to these parts of the body. And of course, these parts of the body tend to be repulsive and disgusting and a cause for shame. And this is the second item which we use, the second requisite which we use. And by using it in this way, we don't use it for beautification or for provoking sexual desire or sensual desire in other people. We don't use it as a means for beautifying or intoxicating ourselves or other people. And in this way, we are able to do away with greed, with the desire, with the lust which might arise in our minds otherwise. And when we are able to do away with this lust, of course we live at peace, we live at ease, we live without the fire, without the burning fire inside, the need, and the successive, the eventual suffering, or the refuted desire, or the not getting what we want, the suffering which comes when we aren't able to obtain the thing which we desire. This is the second requisite which we use. The third requisite is shelter. And so, of course, everyone in the world needs some sort of shelter to keep them free from free from the elements. And according to the Lord Buddha, the requirements for shelter are that it should keep us free from heat, free from cold, free from the bite and the sting of mosquitoes and other small creatures. And most importantly, that it should bring about a state of seclusion, that we should not be interrupted, or we should not be bothered by society or by other people, that we should not have to engage as a result of our dwelling in conversation or in interaction with other people, for the purpose that we might come to understand ourselves. We might come to know and to realize the truth about ourselves and the world around us. And so we use shelter simply as a means of creating a conducive meditation environment. Whereas other people might use shelter for the purpose of doing bad things, or for the purpose of luxury, or the purpose of indulgence in this or that pleasure. The Lord Buddha recommended that we live at the foot of a tree, that we go and find a tree with big leaves and with a good shelter from the sun and the rain. And we live at the foot of the tree and practice meditation either walking or sitting at the foot of the tree. And in this way it was that the Lord Buddha himself became enlightened. So it's considered to be a bare necessity for shelter is the foot of a tree. The Lord Buddha also allowed monks and nuns to live in huts, to live in buildings. He said this was a problem as long as we use these things and understood how to use them. So when we use these things correctly, when we use them for their correct purpose, and we wouldn't use our meditation hut as a place for social gathering, or as a place to accumulate belongings, or as a place to indulge in secret activities, in secret indulgences or breaking precepts or so on. We use it instead for seclusion and for as a place where we might be able to practice, to gain vipassana insight and to see clearly about ourselves and the world around us. And then in this way we'll be able to become free from our attachments. Again, this is important as we have to consider ourselves to be homeless. That we might have a kuti, we might have a hut, we might have a place to live, but we don't hold on to it or take it to be me or to be mine. Or we don't use it in the way that an ordinary person might use it, having all of the many belongings which ordinary people might have. We use it instead for the purpose of practicing and keeping all sorts of Dhamma books or books on the Lord Buddha's teaching or so on, but not for the purpose of any sort of indulgence in worldly affairs. This is the third requisite. The fourth requisite, which is a method through using it we can become free from the asava, is medicine. And medicine is very important because nowadays we find that medicine is actually being used as a means to avoid the necessity of purifying our minds, avoid the necessity of practicing. And nowadays it even goes beyond medicine. It's come to all sorts of many different means. Nowadays there are meditation tapes and meditation videos and meditation sounds, meditation techniques which allow us to avoid the necessity of purifying our minds. I've had many people ask me about these tapes and videos and even just audio CDs with sounds which create a meditative state of enlightenment, they say. And these fall into the same category as some sort of medicine. These are thought to be something which will cure us of our suffering. So whether it be a pill which we ingest, or whether it be a tape which we listen to, or there be any sort of mechanism which is meant to bring about eternal peace and happiness. We have to understand the limit, the benefit of these things and the limit of these things. The benefit is that they do bring peace and happiness. Even many different kinds of medicine, herbal medicine or even Western medicine, can bring about freedom from sickness, freedom from discomfort, acupuncture, massage, and so on. But none of these things can claim to be eternal, because they can always be overrided by a future action. And since we can heal our back only to go out and heal our back from any kind of backache or back problem, only to go out and throw our back out again or hurt our back in a different way, or when we pass away from this life to be reborn somewhere else with the same bad back, depending on the karma which we have performed in past lives. As an example, when we have sicknesses in this way or that way and we find a way to overcome them, we can only hope to overcome them to the point where we pass away from this lifetime. When we are born again, we will create a new body. The new body will be created based on these very same structures which exist in our mind, these very same, you could say, genetic structures which we have built up and are carrying forth with us, even to the point of death and beyond. And so it's important to realize that anything which brings about a state of peace and comfort or happiness in the body or in the mind, that it can't hope to be eternal, it can't hope to be permanent without something else which is permanent. And the permanent cure in this case is wisdom. And when we see and when we know the truth about suffering and the cause of suffering, then anything which comes to us, whether it be an unpleasant sensation in the body or an unpleasant sensation in the mind, we'll be able to deal with it and understand what are the causes and conditions of suffering. That when we see or hear or smell or taste or feel something unpleasant, that it is the next step, which is our craving, our attachment, our desire for it to be this way or that way, for something to continue on or for something to cease. It is that itself which leads to suffering, not the object itself. But the objects of the sense are simply things which arise and cease and have no inherent power to make us suffer. And we come to see that sickness or affliction, whether it exists in the body or in the mind, that it can't actually lead us to suffer. And because it itself is not a cause for suffering. The cause for suffering is in our reaction to these things. And so the Lord Buddha prescribed that we use medicine for the purpose of bringing about comfort, for doing away with painful feelings, which might get in the way of meditation practice. But that in the end, we use them simply for what they are. We use them as a means to continue our practice. That if there is something which is getting in the way of our practice or would possibly get in the way of our practice in the future, that we take whatever means necessary to prevent it or to ameliorate the condition, to allow us to continue on our path to become free from suffering. And this is the fourth necessity. So These four things, this is what the Lord Buddha called pati sevana pahatapa, that by using these four things in the correct way, the four requisites of a Buddhist monk or nun, that these can be a means of becoming free from the asava. This is a means which we should try, whether we are monks or nuns or people living in the world, we should try to emulate as we can. That there may be, if we are a lay person living in the world, it may be very difficult for us to come to this state. You know, we can't go around wearing rag robes. We can't simply eat the food from alms round. We can't live at the foot of a tree or in the forest as a monk or a nun. We can't we can't live our lives in the same exact way. But we can still emulate the life of a monk or a nun. We can try our best to give up the things which are not necessary for us, using all of the things around us which we find ourselves caught up in, simply for the purpose which they are meant for and nothing more. Not letting them intoxicate us or create states of sensual desire or sensual lust, which would later be a cause for action and subsequent suffering for us. That we, whatever food we eat it mindfully and we simply use it. In the end, of course, it comes down only to mindfulness. Whatever we use, when we put on our robes, we put them on mindfully and we wear them mindfully. When we like them or we're attached to them or when we don't like them, we become aware of this state of mind, that it's something which is arising in us and is impermanent, is suffering, is non-self, and not holding on to it. And when we're able to let go in this way, when we're able to see clearly in this way about the things which we use, and not becoming attached or excited or repulsed by them, simply using them for the purpose which they're meant for, then we can become free from our attachments to this world. It's another important point, is that not only are we dealing with the six senses, we're also dealing with conceptual things, the things which we use, which we wear, which we consume, which we reside in. We're using them for the correct purpose and nothing else. When we use them and consider carefully as we use them, then we will find ourselves using them in the correct way and in a way that will lead us to peace and to happiness and freedom from suffering in this very life. So this is another important point for us to keep in mind in our practice. And that's all for today. Now I do some actual practice. We'll do walking and sitting together.